This is UN in Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Jocelyn Sambira. In this week's program, refugees in Uganda are not getting the support they need because of a lack of funds, and tobacco use in Africa could lead to a time bomb of health-related problems. But first, the UN Security Council has been urged to continue calling for the swift endorsement of a recent political agreement in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, DRC. The appeal was made by UN peacekeeping chief Hervé Latsou, who has updated members on political and security developments in the country. Government and opposition groups had signed an agreement in late December related to the electoral process. Deanne Penn reports.
The crisis stems from President Joseph Kabila's decision to remain in power beyond the end of his second and final mandated term. Under the agreement, he will leave office after elections, which will be held no later than December of this year. Speaking through an interpreter, Mr. Latsou said the 31 December accord came at a critical time in the DRC, one of rising political tension and violence in some parts of the country.
It should also be highlighted that now the horizon opens for elections, finally. Now, for these to take place in December 2017, political, financial, technical and logistical support will be needed on a large scale.
The agreement was signed under the auspices of the Catholic Church. Monsignor Marcel Utembi, chair of the National Episcopal Conference of the Congo, spoke via video conference from the capital, Kinshasa.
The political commitments agreed in Kinshasa provide for the establishment of a national council to oversee the agreement and the establishment of a broad government of national unity. And it is urgent that these bodies be actually implemented as soon as the agreed program is implemented in the near future.
Meanwhile, the volatile security situation in the eastern DRC remains a concern. The activities of various militia groups are on the rise, coupled with the threat posed by armed groups out of Uganda, Rwanda, and now South Sudan. Ambassador Ignace Gatamavita Walafuta is the DRC representative to the United Nations. He spoke through an interpreter.
The DRC cannot continue to be a haven for foreign armed groups. Neighboring countries must adopt policies that encourage the return of their nationals who are currently in DRC. This will alleviate tension, remove suspicion, and therefore lead to the trust in the region and the peace that we need in the eastern part of DRC.
The ambassador expressed gratitude for UN efforts to preserve his country's sovereignty and to safeguard peace and stability. Deanne Penn, United Nations.
The increased use of tobacco in Africa could lead to a time bomb of health-related problems, according to the World Health Organization. WHO has recently published the Economics of Tobacco and Tobacco Control Report, which shows that while the global consumption of tobacco is declining, in Africa the reverse is happening. Daniel Dickinson has been speaking to Evan Bletcher, an economist with WHO in Geneva.
What we're really seeing in Africa right now is an increase in tobacco use. Traditionally, we've seen tobacco use in Africa lower than in most other regions in the world. As we're seeing that tobacco use is falling in the developed world and even starting to fall in some places in the developing world, we're starting to see the slack then picking up in Africa, where the multinational tobacco companies are starting to target African consumers far more aggressively.
Presumably, it's about economic wealth. But why, when people have more money, do they start smoking? It's not a very sensible thing to do, is it?
Kind of interesting because it happens differently at different stages of an epidemic in a way. What we see in the developed world as people become more educated, richer, so to speak, we start seeing their probability of becoming smokers decline. Their knowledge of the health consequences of smoking and probably wanting a healthier lifestyle starts to increase. But, you know, when we look at the developing world and particularly the low-income countries, it's kind of the opposite. As people urbanize, as they become wealthier, they're starting to smoke more. Part of that's also linked to tobacco advertising, marketing, and sponsorship. In the developed world, the ability of the companies to brand their products as being aspirational, which are being linked to that growing incomes and higher education, is no longer possible because we don't see advertising, sponsorship, promotion, marketing of tobacco products. In many African countries, we don't quite have these policies in place yet. And the result is that tobacco companies are still able to use aggressive marketing tactics.
What are the health implications looking ahead? Are we looking at a time bomb?
In a way, we are. On one side, you know, we look at the typical smoking-related diseases. Typically, those are cancer, cardiovascular disease, and COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary diseases. What we're seeing is as African populations are healthier than they've ever been. We look at child mortality rates in Africa are as low as they've ever been, and life expectancy is rising, often because we've had great successes in infectious diseases and dealing with HIV and AIDS and hopefully going forward with malaria. As those populations start living longer, so they're going to have greater lengths of exposures to tobacco smoke and thus have greater probabilities of contracting those diseases. The other side of it is that the health systems, which are already overburdened with infectious diseases like HIV, AIDS, TB, malaria, aren't in the position to be able to treat those diseases. So we're seeing the sort of time bomb in terms of the increased diseases because of increased tobacco use, the increased disease burden because of longer life expectancy because of other successes in an environment where health systems are already overstretched. We don't have the resources in these countries to then deal with the massive time bomb of tobacco-related diseases.
Thousands of refugees who are entering Uganda on a daily basis from three neighboring countries are not getting the support they need due to a lack of funding, according to the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR. The East African country received more than 500,000 new refugees from South Sudan, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Burundi last year. UNHCR's Charles Yaxley is based in Uganda. Rosemary Musumba asked him about the influx of refugees.
During the course of 2016, Uganda received more than 500,000 new refugees from three main emergencies, from South Sudan, from the Democratic Republic of Congo, and from Burundi. Uganda has continued to adopt a generous and hospitable approach to refugees. They have a very progressive approach to finding where refugees are given plots of land on which to build homes and to grow crops. And they're also given the freedom to work, start businesses, and to move around the country.
Are there any good news on what has happened so far for those who've been reintegrated in any communities, in any host communities?
Well, in light of Uganda's progressive approach to refugee management and protections, refugees are able to use their skills, and they do so in a variety of different ways. Many of the South Sudanese refugees who come into Uganda typically have agricultural backgrounds, and we support them with agricultural tools and seeds with which to help them use the skills that they have to develop their own crops that they can hopefully not only feed themselves and their community with, also develop on a commercial basis. We have other refugees, some who come from urban areas who have professional skills that they're able to use. We have doctors, accountants, and so on. And really, this model is an inspirational one, but is an example to other countries, not only in the region, but across the world, of a way that refugees can be integrated to live side by side with host communities. Well, Uganda is facing three simultaneous emergencies from South Sudan, Burundi, and DRC. And the humanitarian response to those crises continue to be severely underfunded. As an example, last year we received just 36% of the $251 million that we needed to meet the needs of South Sudanese refugees in Uganda in 2016. And that places a significant burden on the humanitarian response and is compromising our abilities to provide life-saving assistance and critical basic services.
Have you had any of the refugees go back to their countries of origin or want to be placed elsewhere?
Well, the vast majority, more than 80% of refugees in Uganda are from three main countries, from South Sudan, they're from the Democratic Republic of Congo, particularly the eastern part, and they're fleeing the violence that's taken place in Burundi. Now, as it stands, the situations in those three countries remain quite volatile. The security conditions are not conducive to refugees returning home, and that means that far from refugees being able to leave Uganda, we're actually seeing thousands more arrive on a daily basis.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of UN in Africa. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Jocelyn Sambira.